Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by Ram Trucks. Guts, glory, Ram.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe,
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room.
All right, this is me tapping the mic. As I proclaim off the top that I have something very important to say here to begin Cardinals Underground, the podcast, all brought to you by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram.
It's very about time, Paul.
Important to say, Wolf, here, right off the top. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Darren Urban, are you ready?
Sure.
Jim Omohundro, we have speed? Because right off the top, here's what I have to say. Wait for it. Wolf, what do you got? Darren,
oh,
what says
my goodness.
You? Yeah, okay, I'll start. Here's
okay,
the deal.
Yes.
There I was, and the contrast to me was striking. How loud that stadium is. I mean, I had my little sideline pencil neck guy headset cranked up to the Spinal Tap 11 just to hear Dave Pasch and Ron Wolfley and make sure I wasn't missing a cue. I don't think I missed any cues. If I did, don't tell me now, Omo. All right, don't ruin any thoughts I had about the game. And then you go into the locker room, and what? Crickets.
Yes.
Stone silence. You go from the chaos and the crescendo that is Fall Start Field into the visitors' locker room, and you're afraid to exhale. That's how quiet it was after that game. You guys obviously been in a lot of locker rooms, but what was your takeaway after the scoreboard read 58-0, the most lopsided loss in franchise history?
Well, for me personally, Paulie, it brought back a lot of memories, okay, just because, again, I have played 10 years in the NFL and never played on a winning team. I never even played on an 8-8 team, and it reinforced my belief that every player has got to make this game personal to himself. When you're on a team that is struggling, when you're on a team that is as bad as the Arizona Cardinals are playing right now, where you're 4-9 and you just got an exclamation point to that 9-game losing streak by losing to a division rival 58-0, you have to be able to look at yourself, be a little bit introspective, and start questioning why it is that you play this game. And it's the reason why I say if you make the game personal to yourself, you will not care what the down and distance is. You will not care what quarter you're playing in. You will not care what the score is. You will not. All you will see is that next play in front of you. It reinforced to me the mentality that professional football players should have. You are a mercenary. You play in the biggest mercenary league there is. You are paid to go out and lay it on the line, game in and game out. That was my number one takeaway. It brought back a lot of memories, and it reinforced my dogma, my belief, that you've got to make this game personal to yourself and take pride in your job.
I know from my perspective, it felt like the way the game went in New York, the way it ended, the way the offense struggled so much, and I can't remember if we talked about it last week on the podcast. I know I talked about it myself with a couple other people. You wondered if that was the breaking point, the New York loss, the way it happened, the mess at the end of the game with Darnell Dockett. If there was some kind of breaking point. And so when that game unfolded in Seattle, that's what it felt like to me. My immediate takeaway was apparently it was some kind of breaking point because this shouldn't happen. Now, some of the stuff that happened Sunday is, I don't want to say dumb luck, but I mean, you're not going to turn the ball over 8 times most weeks. And that's where it really got sideways. I mean, you don't lose 58-0. Maybe you lose 31-0, but you don't lose 58-0. But it was disappointing. I know there's been a lot of talk from both the head coach and the players talking about the effort was there. I've never played the game. I can't say for sure, but I will say from an outside observer, I've watched this league long enough. I've watched the talent level long enough. Even the worst Cardinal teams I've seen, when they're giving it 100%, you don't lose games 58-0. You just don't. The only way it gets that lopsided is if something happens there, and that was my takeaway.
Even when the Niners put on a dominant performance on Monday night, which would be the only other instance where you would say the Cardinals really got dominated this season. I mean, that wasn't even close to that sort of final score.
Exactly.
Not
exactly.
Even close. And you know,
and again, it really shows up. It really shows up. There is something I always talk about as well. I talk about there is desperation. And then there is desperation. And the difference between the two, I think, is clear for everyone who is listening right now. And there is intensity, and then there is intensity that you need to play this game with. And this game, you hear me also say all the time, this game loves the wretched. It loves the downtrodden. It loves the forlorn. It loves the hungry. It loves the desperate. It rewards you because you have the ability to play at this level. You wouldn't be out on the football field if you did not have the ability to play at that level. But my goodness, if you can generate that type of intensity, you're going to be able to hold up. Regardless of your skill level, for the most part, you're going to be able to go out there and do your job. And this game will reward you for your effort. And that really shows up because of the essence and the nature of the game of football and what the game is all about. Where do you think that really shows up most of all? It shows up on the line of scrimmage, first and foremost. And you can't tell me, looking at this defense, I realize they were put in an untenable situation with 6 turnovers in the first half, 8 on the day. I understand that. But you can't tell me with this defense and how well this defense has played in the past, how well this defense has played this season, you cannot tell me that that type of intensity was being brought to the field. Now, you can call that whatever you want. You can call it whatever you want. You can use whatever word you want to use to describe that. To me, there's only one way to play the game. The intensity level demands that you play it with all that you have. And if you're not doing that, that's a question you have to answer yourself when you look at yourself in the mirror.
Well, think back to the Big Red Rage leading into that game and the trip to Seattle. And at the very end of the show, we did the proverbial, right? Hey, what's the key to the game, guys? And both Kerry Rhodes and Patrick Peterson instantly said, gang tackling. How much gang tackling did we see in that game? And 284 yards rushing by the Seahawks. And you know what, Marshawn Lynch went over 100 on 11 carries, and Robert Turbin came in. He had over 100 himself. If there was gang tackling, unfortunately for the Cardinals, it was at the second level. It was down the field, and gap discipline they talked about, didn't see much of that either.
No.
You know, with the yardage, nearly 500 yards total offense for Seattle.
No, absolutely. It was as bad a football as I have seen played, and I have seen, because of what I've said already, played 10 years in the NFL, never played on a winning team. I have seen a lot of bad football games. I have seen that. What I witnessed against the Seattle Seahawks up at CenturyLink Field was unlike anything I've ever seen in my career.
So has the offense, more specifically the quarterback position, deflated and demoralized, do you think the defense? Did it get to that point in the season? And that was the byproduct of that, Darren. We talked about it the last couple of weeks. Are the Cardinals a team that is struggling or a team that is struggling at the quarterback position? And when you have 2 more first downs than you had turnovers in the game, and you had a game earlier not too long ago where you had 6 takeaways, right, against the Falcons and didn't cash those in, ended up on the losing end. Has it finally gone over to the other side of the ball and taken the defense down with it?
You hope not. With 3 games to go, you're hoping they kind of regain it. But what's kind of frightening is, you know, Darnell Dockett made that point last week, and I think that was the prevailing feeling, and I think it was the germination of what happened at the end of the Jets game. You know, the defense was playing for rankings, for statistics. And that's one of the reasons there was an issue, because the offense was playing so poorly. And now you just have a game that basically blows all your statistics out of the water anyways. So now what is your motivation? And that would be a concern of mine going forward. You know, I think they rally a little bit coming home. But, I mean, there's a lot to see this week. I mean, let's face it, coming out of that game, the fans were heated. I understand that, deservedly so. There was a lot of call for change. You know, Michael Bidwell made clear on Monday that he wasn't going to make any emotional decisions in terms of changes, which, you know, when we're talking that kind of change, we're talking about coaching and front office type changes. And so now you've got a fan base who's going to show up Sunday that are still upset, I'm sure. And so I'll be interested to see how they react to the team, how the team reacts to them, how the team reacts to being back at home. You know, this isn't a situation where that was the last game of the year or that they got one more road game to go. I mean, they got three games left. Three games, two of them against probable playoff teams, another game against a team this weekend in Detroit that a lot of people thought was going to be a playoff team, and you know, barely lost in Green Bay and has been close in all their games. I mean, they're an effective team. They're not the proverbial 4-9 team. I mean, both these teams are 4-9, but I think both these teams are in totally different spots.
I ain't no sociologist over here or any sort of Dr. Phil when it comes to the fans, but, you know, you want a reaction out of a fan base, any team, any sport, anywhere. If the fans sense that they care more than the players on that field or on that court, then look out. They can unload. I mean, they will react if they sense that they care more about the outcome than those guys who are in uniform.
I am with Darren on this one, though, Paulie. In what I think you're saying is 100% true, but I do believe that they're going to rally coming home. I do believe there's going to be some personal pride that is going to take over here. Now, whether or not that means they're going to be able to improve their play, I don't know. But I would be absolutely shocked if, in fact, the Cardinals don't come out and give their best, knowing they're coming off a football game that was, it was an abomination, frankly. And I think they know that. And I think there's enough guys in the locker room that have enough pride in their profession, have enough pride in what it is that they do, that they will come out and rally themselves, rally their passions, and play the game the way it's supposed to be played. Now, does that mean they're going to win? No, absolutely not. Does it mean that they're going to play better than what they played in Seattle? I'll guarantee it if they'll do that and resolve that in their heart.
Now, Darren, I probably should ask you this before the podcast, before Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Ram Trucks, Guts Glory Ram. Were you there when Michael Bidwell came down to the media room and made those comments on Monday?
Yes, I was.
So in addition to the quotes, which we see in print, I was not there, and we talk about, you know, how he called it, quote, unacceptable, and said he's not going to rush a decision and not make an emotional decision until the season is complete. What else did you glean, I don't know, from his demeanor, his mindset, just how he appeared? I don't know. What other takeaways did you have? Because you were one of the select few in that room.
It's an uncomfortable situation. It's just uncomfortable. I mean, I'm not saying he was uncomfortable speaking to the media, but it's, look, you're the team owner. You don't want to have to come down and be talking about this situation after a 58-0 loss and, you know, the future of your coaches, and that's not what you want. And, you know, it was relatively brief. I think it was only 3 or 4 minutes. I mean, I ended up posting the entire transcript on my blog, including the questions, because that was part of what I wanted to make sure got across, was exactly what the questions were and exactly what the answers were, so people can glean what they want to glean. Obviously, you don't get an emotion out of it, but, you know, he was even keeled in what he was saying. You know, he's not happy, but I don't think he needs to come down and say, I mean, he did, and I know a lot of fans wanted him to say something, which was, I think, good. But I don't think he needed to come down for anybody to think that the owner of this team would be not happy with how the situation is going. And I think when he says he wants to, you know, get all the facts and not make any emotional decisions, look, it's not like the ownership here or the front office or any of the decision makers aren't sitting back the whole time evaluating this as we go. This isn't to imply like we're just going to start evaluating this now, so we need these last 3 weeks to figure it out. I'm sure they've got already a plan of action in the back of their heads, but to pull the trigger now, I mean, the bottom line is, and I'm not saying there's definitely going to be, for instance, a head coaching change at the end of the season. I don't know that. But you know, in the time that I've been around this team, dating back to 2000, there have been three previous coaching changes since I've been covering them. Only one happened in season. That was 2000 with Vince Tobin, and they had a ballot thing coming up in the middle of the season later that year to get the stadium built. And the fans were upset, and they knew if they didn't make a change and try to do something, there was no way it was going to pass. So Vince Tobin gets fired 7 games into the season. But when Dave McGinnis got let go, it was after the season. And let me tell you, as bad as it is right now, it was just as bad in that 2003 season down the stretch, especially when they were going on the road playing a Cleveland team that was in complete disarray and losing 44-6, playing a bad Chicago team and getting run off the field. I mean, it was a similar type situation. And yet, they waited until the end of the year to make something happen. And then, I mean, we all were, it was an 8-game losing streak in 2006. Denny mailed it in at that point. He almost wanted to be fired at midseason at that point in that first year. But they decided we're going to play the season out, and then they made the change right after the end of the season. And again, I'm not saying there's going to be a change for sure, but I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know why anybody would be surprised that Michael Bidwell would want to wait until the end of the season, get all his ducks in a row, and make a transition there that, rather than something messy in the middle of the season, which emotionally might feel good in the short term, but in this league, and you can look at any team, rarely makes much sense to do.
All right, so speaking of your blog, let's talk about four names here, and two on offense and then two on defense. In fact, we'll start with the quarterbacks. Let's start with Brian Hoyer. Wolf, what's realistic? Guy claimed off waivers from the Steelers, spent 3 years as Tom Brady's backup. Any chance they can make it feasible and doable enough for him to get into the game against the Lions on Sunday? I mean, could that actually happen? Could they take out a sliver of the playbook and say, you know what, we're just going to focus on this one chapter of the playbook, and you're going to run a very streamlined offense against the Lions?
I suppose, Paul, that is completely possible. I think there is a way that you could do that. It has happened before in the National Football League. Don't ask me to bring up these specifics, but it's happened before where a guy, yeah, exactly,
off his couch,
which is kind of why I said, please don't ask me to bring up the specifics. But you're right. I mean, you can do it. It is possible to bring somebody off the street and just create a very rudimentary, fundamental package offensive game plan that he'd be able to go out and execute. But it's an act of desperation, and I suppose you could say the Cardinals are in a desperate situation when it comes to that quarterback situation. So is it, to answer your question in a very circuitous, Ron Wolfley roundabout kind of way, verbose, yes, Paul, I think we could see it. I doubt it's going to happen.
And I agree wholeheartedly with Wolf. Now, if you're asking me, could we see Brian Hoyer, and I keep wanting to call him Bobby Hoyer because I'm thinking of Bobby Hoying, the former Ohio State.
Don't do that to me. I'm going to start messing that up now. Oh, my goodness.
Is it possible we could see Brian Hoyer? Boy, I'm already screwing
up. Dang.
Is it possible we're going to see him against the Bears? Maybe even starting?
Oh, yeah.
Or I absolutely think that's possible.
Yes.
Because why
yes.
wouldn't you at that point?
Sure.
But I think this week you get his feet underneath him. You put one of the other two guys out there. You know, again, for the same reason you would even consider putting a guy out there this weekend that you just signed is the same reason why you don't need to put him out there this weekend. Because why? Why?
Why? Because maybe the most important attribute of any quarterback in the NFL is accuracy, and you have two quarterbacks who are struggling in that department right now.
True. True.
And an accurate quarterback who knows very little on a very rudimentary level is better than a quarterback who has a complete mastery of the playbook who can't hit his target.
I can't argue with that right now. But, what I've seen in this league is guys, quarterbacks with very little prep time, no matter who they are most of the time, are not only struggle with accuracy, but their accuracy might actually look worse in the short term, even if they're very accurate, because they don't know where the hell they're going with the ball. Yeah.
And you're dealing with a rookie center, which wasn't one of the four names, but that will duck in Scott Wettage right there. You're on your third center, so that certainly does not help, .. Kevin Cobb, how many of the 32 games in 2 years? Was it 15, Darren?
15. He played in 15.
15.
And that's including the start against the 49ers last year in which he played, what, three plays?
Wow. See, that is the one thing that There's a real possibility, as we've discussed before here on Cardinals Underground, presented by whom, Paul?
That would be Ram Trucks, Guts Glory Ram.
Yes, ding. We've talked about this before, but it's one of the reasons that makes it so difficult for this franchise to go forward, because it as it stands right now, a restructured Kevin Cobb looks like the best alternative you may have in 2013.
Ding.
And yet, ding, you've again got 15 games he's played in over the last 32 that you've played. That is so difficult to make any type of plans and make them the way they need to be made with certitude and have conviction and say, this is what we're going to do. We're going to move forward. We have this plan. We have this belief. When you're not sure that guy that you're going to go forward with, that you're going to have lead this team, that you're going to put pieces around as a franchise guy, a guy that's going to lead a $1 billion plus franchise forward, you don't know if he is going to be there. And that makes it incredibly difficult to make real plans and do it in the determined way that you must.
And when you say restructure, just so we clarify here, the books say his salary next year is for $9 million.
Correct.
And then on top of that, there's a $2 million roster bonus
in
March.
Yes.
And if I read correctly, it's the same exact day that Alex Smith is owed $8 million from the Niners. So you might run into, I don't know, for speculation's sake, just throwing it out there, a similar situation with Cobb and Peyton Manning could be Cobb and Alex Smith if he's one of the only free agent QBs of note to hit the market next year.
Here's why it's not the same situation, because I think at this point, with the unfortunate part of Kevin missing so many games, as much as you might think he's your best alternative at this moment, I think with the games, I think it's going to be clear that, I mean, I see Kevin Cobb more of a Levi, going into this season, more of a Levi Brown situation. This past year,
Let him test the market.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a lot of demand. His price
exactly
comes down.
I mean, last year, you had Peyton Manning coming up. You had to keep Kevin. I mean, unless the miracle Peyton thing happened, but you had to keep Kevin because you can't make a judgment on one season, not only how he played, but whether he was going to be hurt, any of that stuff. You couldn't. And I know there are going to be people out there going, what are you talking about? Of course, you could already know he was going to get hurt. That's a bunch of crap. But, you know, you couldn't do it this year or last year. This year, you can. This year, if he doesn't want to restructure off the top, then you amicably say, look, we're going to let you go. You test the market. We have interest in bringing you back, and let's see where it goes from here. Because that's exactly what happened with Levi Brown. He ends up staying. Now, I don't know. I mean, I'm not willing to sit here and say Alex Smith. I mean, other than the fact, in theory, he stays more healthy. I'm not willing here to sit here and say Alex Smith is an improvement over Kevin Cobb as a player. I don't know that. I mean, let's face it. Alex Smith's best days in the San Francisco 49ers uniform came after they created a monster defense and a monster run game. And they said was, don't screw it up. And last year, it was better this year. There's no question it was better this year. But last year, I mean, David Akers set a field goal record or whatever he did because they couldn't score touchdowns. And
although his Norv Turner year wasn't bad. They had a lot of dysfunction on that coaching staff and the OCs. The Norv Turner year wasn't bad.
And the way, obviously, John Skelton and Ryan Lindley have been, Alex Smith is very good. So, you know, we'll have to see how that plays out. There's a lot to go. And as I've mentioned to other people, when people have asked me about that or the Darnell situation in the future or the Adrian Wilson situation in the future, until this team right after the season figures out what they're doing in the front office, what they're doing with the coaching staff, either keeping it status quo or making some kind of move, all that is way below that because you got to work from the top down.
Well, funny you bring up those two names because those were the other names I have written down on the defensive side of the ball. So where do you want to start there? Let's start with Adrian Wilson. And, you know, his quote on Monday, I think, said it all when he said, "We're competing, just not at an NFL level." Meaning that was his explanation in the Seattle game.
Yeah.
Okay. So will he be competing in Cardinals red next year? What do you forecast on that front, Darren? Adrian Wilson.
I think it's hard to know right now. I know he's upset that he's not playing more. I get that. And I'm sure he's still stinging from the contract that he ended up taking before the year too. I don't doubt that either. But I also know that Rashad Johnson's an unrestricted free agent and James Sanders is an unrestricted free agent, and there's nobody in the pipeline to play in front of Adrian. And right now, Adrian is still playing the majority of the time. So to think that there's some kind of lock that he won't be here next year, that they'll just let him go, I don't see that right now. I just don't.
All right, Wolf, you want to comment on either Adrian Wilson or Darnell Dockett is the other name, and what do you see in the crystal ball of those two guys?
I don't know how to answer that, Paulie, other than this. I do know that there's going to be some changes. I think there's going to be a huge upheaval, if you will, on this roster. And there's so many other decisions that the organization is faced with, so many other things that they're going to have to determine first before they get to the roster. But I would predict right now that the roster for 2013 is going to look vastly different than it does right now. I think you're going to have an awful lot of turnover.
Cardinals and Lions. So what do you think? Is this the best shot down the stretch? Because you have a Bears team and probably a Niners team that will be playing for playoff positioning. It doesn't look like either one will be able to just go ahead and rest their starters
at the end of
the season, right?
You would think. But, I mean, at this point, I don't think the Cardinals can look at any opponent right now and say, oh, you know, hey, this is our best shot or whatever. I mean, they what they need to do is play a solid game, like Wolf was saying earlier, and the chips fall where they may, and you hope that they can get a win, because it would be god awful to end on a losing streak like this in the season. And I think right now that's got to be one of your biggest motivations, is you don't want to be saddled, you don't want to be part of a roster, part of a team that has that legacy. You just don't want that.
No, absolutely not, Darren. That's an excellent point. I think you've got three games left to go. And I really do believe that the best way to proceed is with Ken Whisenhunt as your head coach, in particular over these next three games. It's one of the reasons why I was happy to see Michael Bidwell come out and say that he was going to wait. He didn't want to make a rash decision, because right now you've got talent evaluators. Right now you've got your personnel department looking at this football team. And how a lot of your guys, to my previous point, how a lot of these guys finish the season will dictate whether or not they're going to be back in 2013. This is about 2013, who's going to be on your roster, who's not going to be on your roster. You're going to have some tough decisions to make, some of them not so tough. But these three games, you'll have players that will show themselves. You'll have players, both good and bad, that will show you who they are. And in the immortal words of Bill Parcells, who said, once a guy shows you who he is, believe him.
You know what? This feels like a end-of-the-year podcast, end-of-the-season podcast. It's hard to believe there's three games left.
In the words of Ken Whisenhunt, quote, they've got to understand that they're going to be watched and monitored. They're going to be on tape. And that's one of the things that when you're evaluating players, you look at. You see how they handle those things.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot.
Ding.
Yeah. So you know what? If you're not doing it for your coach, if you're not doing it for your career or your teammates, do it for the home fans. How about that? Because it's going to be a different dynamic than being on the road the last 2 weeks in New York and Seattle.
Just stop with yourself. Do it for yourself.
For Ron Wolfley, Darren Urban, Jim O'Mahunter, I'm Paul Calvisi. This has been Cardinals Underground, brought to you by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram, on azcardinals.com. Head up, everybody,